right, everybody, welcome back to the pep talk version of the Taking Care of Business podcast. This is your humble host, Dan Trottencheck. Glad you could be with us today. It's certainly nothing to laugh about, but it seems like we've been talking about the challenges of operating a business in the time of COVID now for the last couple of months, and we've been getting together a couple of times a week, and now it seems with all of the civil unrest and the challenges that presents across across the country, we're now dealing with, as business owners and managers, we're dealing with a different set of problems, and hopefully all the more reason to hopefully on both fronts look at the positive outcomes that could potentially emerge from both these situations. So just everybody know that the whole NRHA team, myself certainly included, is thinking about everybody right now during these difficult times, and hoping that you are all doing well and you are all safe. And it is kind of a time of contemplation about a lot of things, and we hope you are sincerely thinking those things through. And one of the things that is important, and one of the things that really kind of shines during any times of challenge or crisis, is a steady hand on the tiller, a good leader to take charge and guide individuals through these troubled waters. And now more than ever, we need good, strong leaders at every level of our society to help us through these difficulties. But to also, you know, in more of a practical sense, make sure that our businesses are headed in the right directions. And while it seems with everything else going on, sometimes it can seem like focusing on business can be, you know, somewhat small-minded. The truth of the matter is, people having good businesses that thrive and offer their employees good places to work and livable wages is really the building block for everything else, for recovery from COVID, from rebuilding our societies from any kind of unrest, and giving people opportunities to do better. So leadership in business is very important during this time. And that's why it was a particularly good time to have our guest for today on. And our guest today is a fellow that I've known for my entire career at NRHA. In fact, was one of my mentors early on at NRHA. That gentleman is Scott Wright, who is now the executive director of NRHA's Retail Leadership Institute. Scott, welcome to the program.
Well, thank you so much, Dan. It's great to be here with you today. And I'm really anxious to talk about, you know, some of the things that are going on with our programs and services in the context and kind of under the backdrop of everything going on with COVID-19 and some of the social unrest today.
Well, thank you for being here. And for the last, I know years travel by quickly these days, and it certainly in the scope of how long we've known each other, but it's been the last 5 or so years that you've been running NRHA's Retail Leadership Institute. And for those in the audience who might not know what the Retail Leadership Institute is, what its purpose is, and kind of what falls under that, why don't you give us a little bit of a overview of what NRHA's Retail Leadership Institute is? And I'll warn everybody in advance that at NRHA, we love these acronyms. So in Scott and my conversation today, you're bound to get an alphabet soup of acronyms. And it's even difficult for me to say Retail Leadership Institute, because internally we refer to it as RLI. And that's the first acronym that you're going to get in our program today. So Scott, we'll try and have to remember that to make sure we at least on first reference say the full name of everything before we get into that acronym frenzy that's sure to follow.
Yeah, absolutely. And like you said, on first reference, I'll try to spell it all out for our folks who might not know what these programs are. But yeah, the NRHA's Retail Leadership Institute, like you said, was really formed 8 years ago
My God, 8 years ago. I said five.
Yeah. Well, no, time flies by, doesn't it? And so today, it's really comprised of several different programs that I'll talk about. But the overarching goal of the Retail Leadership Institute is really to focus on providing higher level educational and networking opportunities that are designed to strengthen the leadership and management skills of owners, managers, and their key employees. So today, the current lineup in our Retail Leadership Institute is kind of the flagship program for the RLI is our Retail Management Certification Program, RMCP, which we launched way back in 2013. And this is the program where students make multiple visits in person to Indianapolis to learn key retail management leadership skills and to really help them learn how to drive business performance, top line sales, bottom line profitability. So they study marketing and merchandising and team building, financial management skills that they're learning.
This is pretty much like a college level class. It is,
and that's one of the unique things about the program, Dan, is that we have college level instructors, which provide about 50% of the instruction. We utilize several gentlemen from Ball State's Entrepreneurship Institute, and one of those individuals was a guest on this very podcast right. A couple of weeks ago, Dr. Rob Matthews. And Rob has been the executive director of that organization's Entrepreneurship Center for, I think, the last 18 years. But what's interesting about Rob is that he also grew up in the hardware business. His folks owned several hardware stores and grocery stores that he worked in while he was growing up. And then he and his wife, Julie, owned and operated a home center just north of Indianapolis for about 10 years. So I've always said that there's no better key instructor, lead instructor, if you will, for the program than Rob, because he not only has the theoretical experience in the college level instructional experience in teaching team building and leadership development, but he also has the practical knowledge of what it takes to own and operate a business in our industry. So it's fantastic to work with them. The other 50% of the instruction for that program, Dan, comes from industry experts in various core competencies, where it's more appropriate to have an expert in, say, store design or store slotting or merchandising that has focused their career on helping retailers in those core competencies in our industry. So,
and I know some of your lead instructors are actually, working in the business, that they're actually working for big independent operations. So they're not just theoretically teaching about this stuff. This is what they're doing every day when they go back to their day jobs.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's the other part of where the instruction for RMCP comes from, is that we've had over 200 students go through the program, some of whom have just been stellar students and fantastic retailers that we continue to bring back to serve as alumni instructors for the program. People like Josiah Gates, who's the executive vice president of Aubuchon Hardware, has taught the budgeting session for the last 5 years. And students absolutely love that we have alumni from the program remaining engaged, coming back and teaching in the program, and people that speak their language, like you said, that's their day-to-day. And so retailers learning from other retailers is a key component of NRHA, whether it's learning from alumni instructors or students just learning from each other, which is a huge component of RMCP. The next program in the Retail Leadership Institute that I'd like to talk about is our Foundations of Leadership program. And that's really the Leadership 101. It's delivered online unlike RMCP, which, like I said, that's in person. But it's a 16-week program that, again, we've worked with the folks at Ball State to develop this formal leadership development program where students, you know, learn things such as communication skills and team building, talent development, you know, those key aspects of being a great leader.
That could be helpful for someone who's brand new to leadership, to someone who's, you know, maybe been in a leadership position for a while and really just wants to kind of better understand how to improve as a leader.
Absolutely. And so I would say a good probably half of the students, and we've had over 250 students now go through this program, which we launched in 2017. And what we've learned is that about half of those students have never been through a formal leadership development program, but they've been leading and managing people for sometimes as much as 20 years. And most of them say at the conclusion of that program that, boy, I wish I would have had this at the beginning, because, you know, like you and me growing up at NRHA, you know, it was kind of trial by fire, and you learn how to manage people and lead people sometimes in just, you know, in the day-to-day operations. And it would have been awful nice to have a program like Foundations of Leadership when we started leading people. So again, this program is delivered completely online. We have two different classes a year. We have a current class that is just now wrapping up. It's been delayed a little bit with COVID-19. Obviously, people have had more important things to do than reach the conclusion of this program. But we're extending it to allow them, once things settle down a little bit, to finish their coursework. So we see the Foundations of Leadership program as not a prerequisite, but a strongly encouraged first step into that leadership management role, where then from there they can go through our retail management certification program. And we actually offer a program where we can reimburse their tuition for Foundations of Leadership and apply that toward their RMCP tuition if they want to continue on.
Okay.
The next program that really launched the Retail Leadership Institute back in 2012 is our roundtable series, where we host about 8 different roundtable groups. I know they're near and dear to your heart as they are to mine.
Absolutely.
I moderate 5 of those roundtable events, and I know you moderate 2 of them. And so what these are, you know, it goes back to really what I have always thought the role of an association is to associate, to bring people together, to talk about the issues of the day, the challenges that they're facing with their peers. And no one can really moderate that like NRHA can, where we can bring together retailers across all different affiliations who otherwise probably wouldn't have gotten together. And the way they have worked really up until just the past few months is that we've scheduled a meeting, whether it's at NRHA headquarters or at one of the retailers' place of business who has offered to host the meeting. And then we work with the roundtable group to come up with a meaningful agenda and that's an important point that they create with the talking points and discussion topics that they feel are most important. And then we spend 2 days going through that agenda. And again, talking about the challenges that they're all facing, sharing best practices in many cases, and really, really bonding as a group. So some of these groups have, like I said, been in existence since we started in 2012, but then we continue to add roundtable groups, the most recent being our Young Guns roundtable group, which is consists of former Young Retailer of the Year honorees and some folks who have been through our retail management certification program who wanted to get together and on an annual basis and network.
Well, and you know, between those programs, it certainly is a great resource point for leaders in the industry, whether it's actually learning about leadership through that, as you called it, the entry point on the foundations of leadership, and really just understanding, getting a better grasp on what is your leadership style, what are the different kind of techniques for being a leader, and then really moving into that next phase of strategic leadership with the management certification program. But I think the roundtables are also important. And as you said, I'm fortunate to be involved in a couple of the roundtables. And what those really represent is a trait of leaders that often goes overlooked. And these roundtables, as you put it, I mean, these are leaders from the different kind of areas of the retail businesses. But what's so important about it is a really a good leader never stops learning and keeps looking for information to gather to make those informed business decisions and learn how to be a better leader and a better visionary. And these roundtables, that's exactly what happens there, is you get a group of 10, 15, 20 leaders. They might be leaders of the marketing and merchandising side or the financial side or the human resources side of the business, but they get together and they share ideas. Then they take those back to their individual operations and hopefully do a better job of making decisions because of that. I got a question for you though, Scott. Obviously right now, leadership matters probably, there's no doubt that being a good leader is important at any stage of a business. But during times of crisis or unusual times like we're seeing right now, leaders are really kind of being put to the test and trying to figure out how to motivate employees, manage their operations, whether that's with increasing business like hardware retailers have been fortunate to see, or in some areas decreasing business or working with a smaller staff. And one thing that I'm hearing more and more about these days is managing the stress on employees. Busier times, maybe a lighter working crew because you have some people that are maybe not coming in, or you've had to adjust hours. So what are you, from all the different groups you're talking to through your associationship with the Retail Leadership Institute, what are you hearing from the retail leaders today about how things are going out there and how they're managing things throughout all these kind of outside forces that are influencing their operations?
Well, yeah, Dan, and to kind of comment on what you said, the best leaders are the ones who continue to want to learn and want to get together with their fellow retailers and share best practices. And so what I'm hearing primarily in talking to these roundtable groups, which, have quickly gone from, meeting once a year in person to now they want to have regular conversations, Zoom meetings. We've all gotten very invested in Zoom. I wish I would have actually invested in Zoom a couple of months ago. But what we're hearing is that after 2.5 months of this, retailers are extremely tired, but in a good way, in a really good way. Their resilience is just amazing to me, Dan. As you alluded to, nothing really showcases great leadership like a crisis like we're going through now. And then, add on to that, some of the social unrest that's going on top of this. And, it does require, leaders to step up and to manage and hopefully mitigate the stress levels of not only their employees, but their customers as well. And, I've said that this has really been a perfect storm for retailers through COVID-19. First, as essential businesses, they've had to find a way to stay open, to remain staffed at adequate levels, and to secure needed essential products for their customers. And usually under extremely stressful conditions. We've all seen the stories of the backlash on the wearing of masks and social distancing. And a lot of this falls squarely on the shoulders of frontline employees and their leaders, their managers. And so so first and foremost, we've heard that folks are tired after a couple months of this. You know, staffing levels decreased when this first hit, sometimes as much as 15 to 20% for retailers, as understandably, you know, some of the frontline employees wanted to stay home. Maybe they had kids that were home from school. So lots of great reasons to want to stay home and stay safe and keep their families stay safe as well. But what this did to retailers is it put an extra burden, a staffing burden on them, at a time when, you know, they were some of the only businesses in their communities that were open. And, you know, add on top of that, the fact that this all happened during the busiest time of year for, retailers in our industry, in the month of April and May, leading into the busy spring selling season. Add on top of that, the fact that, you know, many of us have been forced to work from home. You know, corporate America and corporations throughout Canada, you know, wanted their, you know, shut their offices down. So so folks like us have been working from home, and you know, during a time when you couldn't go anywhere, then the weather started getting nice. So we saw this explosion of DIY activity, primarily in the paint and lawn and garden categories, you know, two of the primary categories for hardware stores. So retailers were faced with all of these elements, all of this stress. And, you know, some of them have seen historic record sales, you know, increases during this period of time, but it's happened, you know, in extreme conditions. So so that's kind of the main thing that we've heard, is that after all of the, you know, the CDC guidelines on how to social distance and all the standards and the miles of plexiglass that went up across the country to, you know, retailers scrambling to figure out things like curbside pickup, online ordering. You know, many retailers have said that their phones have just exploded and they become call centers. And so how do they manage that effectively? You know, so all of these things have made for just an incredibly stressful time for everyone working at a retail hardware store, but you know, primarily for the folks who have to lead and manage those stores and keep it all together.
Yeah, you know, one thing that's really struck me, Scott, you know, through the roundtables I've been working with, and one of those roundtables we're meeting weekly, you know, is, and I'm sure you've probably seen this as well, is everybody on the calls is taking things so seriously. And I know just saying that in of itself, most people, well, of course they're taking it seriously. But what I really mean is the day-to-day leadership decisions, how much thought was and currently is being put into things like, how do I protect my customers? How do I protect my employees? How do I do what's right for my employees and the businesses? And I think sometimes that gets lost, just, you know, maybe sometimes from even an employee point of view of, well, of course they're going to keep the business open, and of course they're going to do this, and of course they're going to do that. But it has really impressed me how much deep thought and in many cases consternation was going into making these decisions. It wasn't, I mean, it really, none of the leaders I dealt with were just, oh, we're going to do this, we're going to do that, we're going to do this, we're going to do that. It was very much, I want to think through and gather information before I make these decisions, which I think right there is a sign of kind of leadership maturity and some of that burden that goes along with, you know, kind of carrying the mantle of being a leader. What, Scott, what are some of the things, obviously, you know, you've touched on some of them, you know, a lot of the components of the Retail Leadership Institute are meant to be face-to-face, the roundtables, the management training. What are you guys, you talked about how you're having regular check-ins with some of your groups and that sort of thing. What are some of the other things in Retail Leadership Institute that you guys are kind of changing around to make up for or to accommodate for some of the social distancing other challenges presented by COVID, kind of what are the things you're doing right now and maybe moving forward? I know that you guys have had to move one of the classes that was scheduled for the summertime and look at a different date. What are some of the things you guys are doing in those regards?
Yeah, you know, I think the getting people together, the roundtable groups, the RMCP classes on these Zoom meetings, just to be able to talk through, like you said, and carefully think through the next course of action, which, oh, by the way, you have to put in place immediately. You know, so bringing these people together online virtually in any way, any capacity we can, has been kind of the utmost importance. I think at the beginning of this at NRHA, you know, I'm so proud of all of us and what we've done so quickly to be able to bring people together to start talking and sharing ideas so they can implement these major business initiatives and think through them quickly. And to do that, sometimes they need to bounce these ideas off right. of each other. So the fact that they've been so innovative and so quick to action, you know, with things that we talk about, curbside pickup, you know, it's amazing to me how, you know, some of these companies who have been working and tweaking their e-commerce and omnichannel presences, you know, for the past several years, all of a sudden have went from, you know, e-commerce sales being less than 1% of their total sales to being over 10% in a matter of weeks. So that takes extreme innovation, but it also takes this networking and sharing ideas. And you know, a lot of retailers are out there, feel like they're on their own during this. There's no COVID-19 playbook out there. So getting them together talking has been probably the most important thing that I think that we've done at NRHA, plus providing all of the resources that are available on hardwareretailing.com. You know, that we've had just thousands of retailers, you know, thank us for and want to come check out. But as you mentioned, we've had to scramble a little bit to determine next steps for some of our key programs, primarily our retail management certification program. As you said, we had to cancel the spring class. It was supposed to start in April. And so I think it was the first week in March, we decided, okay, we're going to bump back the start of that to a June start. Then within several weeks, you know, we quickly determined that it wasn't going to happen. We would take the students who were already registered for that spring class and move them to a fall class. But then in talking, you know, I've been talking a lot to the RMCP instructors and to former students and to folks who, you know, participate in the program on an ongoing basis. And what we came up with was a way to preserve the number of instructional hours while decreasing the number of visits to Indianapolis. So, okay. For example, the fall class will start in September for the first visit to Indianapolis, and then it will conclude with the in-person visits will conclude in November. So where typically they would come back for a third visit in January. But what we're doing is typically we would have two full classroom days of instruction for three visits. Now we're going to two visits with 3 days of classroom instruction each. So we're not losing any instructional hours. We're just saving retailers a trip to Indianapolis at a time when who knows what will be the case with COVID-19. And typically, you know, we bring retailers in from all across North America, and typically Indianapolis is not their first destination choice in January anyway.
Right.
But like so many major universities have just decided to do, you know, we're going to start with in person with those two visits and then move virtual format for the conclusion of the program, which the program, if you don't know anything about it, RMCP, students have to work on a major business improvement project over the course of the six-month program. And so then they present their project presentations in that third visit. So we're going to a virtual, probably a Zoom meeting that'll last a day or a day and a half, where those students will present their projects that they've worked on all semester. It'll give the opportunity for all the students to see all of the other presentations, which up to this point they haven't been able to, way we've currently structured. Again, avoiding that third trip, which will save in expenses and the necessary travel.
Very cool. So, it's not a whole lot different, like you said, from what we're seeing from other universities out there and how they're structuring their kind of fall schedules. What I want to do in the few minutes we have left here, Scott, is I want to transition a little bit to another NRHA leadership focused program that you're also in charge of. And this is a program that actually just by a little bit predates me here at NRHA, but it's our Young Retailer of the Year program. And this year, the program's a little bit different, obviously affected by COVID, and we're working through some of how we're going to deal with the honoring of the winners this year. But actually earlier this week, NRHA announced its 2020 class of young retailers. And why don't you tell us a little bit about what the Young Retailer of the Year program is and how long it's been around and that sort of thing.
Yeah, absolutely. And like you said, this program really came into being about the same time that you and I started at NRHA. Yeah. We're celebrating our 24th year this year for the Young Retailer of the Year program. And like you said, I had been at NRHA maybe a year, maybe a couple of years before it launched. And then you, I think, were the same year or maybe the year after.
Yeah, it was the same year.
It's fantastic. Yeah, the same year. So it's fantastic that you and I have really got to see this program in its entirety for those 24 years and really what this program has meant to the industry and to NRHA. And really, in a nutshell, it showcases the future generations of age 35 and younger who have done amazing things in such a short time in their careers. And who are really doing incredible things to serve their communities.
I know every year, Scott, when we go through the presentation and we look at the accomplishments of these individuals who are all younger than 35, I know one of the things that always comes to the back of my mind certainly is, wow, I hadn't done a lot by the time I was 35 compared to these guys. I mean, you know, it's truly humbling to see what these individuals have done, but it is also super exciting to know that these young people are the next generation of leaders that are going to take the home improvement industry kind of into the next 20, 30 years and beyond that. So tell us a little bit about this year's class.
Yeah, you know, this year we received over 50 different nominations. And we typically get nominations from the wholesalers and co-ops in the industry, but sometimes retailers will nominate a fellow retailer or someone working for them or even themselves. So we just had a fantastic batch to choose from. And it was, as you know, when we get together to make the decision on the final seven, it's extremely difficult to choose because there's so many great folks who are nominated each year. But the judging criteria, just briefly, we look at the high points of their career. So all the things that they've done in such a short period of their careers. We look at their ongoing hardware education. And many times that includes participation in programs that we've talked about already today, the Retail Management Certification Program, or maybe educational programs offered through their co-ops or wholesalers. And then one of the keys to this program is looking at all the different ways that they're serving their communities. And that community involvement and engagement piece, which is such a hallmark for all independent home improvement retailers. It's one of the things that they have that the big boxes can't offer, or Amazon or any other form of competition. So this year it's a very diverse group, just geographically diverse. We have of the seven, we have honorees spanning North America, from Nova Scotia to the Yakima Valley in Washington State, and really all points in between. So let me run through who our honorees are this year. And again, just a fantastic class this year. So the first honoree in our under $2 million in annual sales category is Katie Damaris. And her husband, Tyler, own Damaris Hardware in St. Ansgar, Iowa. I'll have to learn how to pronounge that for
a
formal ceremony. I might butcher them today, but I promise I'll bone up on that. So this is such a fantastic story where Katie and her husband, Tyler, worked for John Deere in corporate roles for a number of years, but then in visiting Tyler's family in a small town in St. Ansgar, Iowa, they learned of a hardware store that had closed. And so they quickly decided that was the next career move. They were going to move back and open this store, and they've done such a fantastic job since they opened the store in 2014. So this is a story that's a feel-good story that needs to be told to show that, the entrepreneurial spirit is alive and well, and it's not just sons and daughters of hardware store owners who are taking the reins. Sometimes it's folks who come from, like I said, corporate America or corporate Canada who are doing this. The second honoree in the under $2 million in sales category is Weston Jacobs. And he's owner of Weekly Watson Hardware in Brownwood, Texas. And so Weston and his family purchased the store in 2017 after learning that the store was closing. It had been in business for 140 years. So talk about the pressure that this young lad was under in taking over the business. But he's done amazing things since he's bought the business, and really the sky is the limit. In the over $2 million in sales category, the group of honorees includes Sam Olson, who is the owner of Buffalo Hardware in Buffalo, South Dakota. Now, I know Sam from his time in RMCP. He was a student in 2017. And Sam's notoriety is, I think he comes from the smallest town that has ever been honored in the Young Retailer of the Year program or our RMCP program. Buffalo, South Dakota has 350 people population, and you can bet that Sam knows each and every one of them. But Sam is such an innovative guy and has done fantastic things to acquire other local businesses in addition to the hardware store, and he'll own the entire town one day, I guarantee it.
with all 350 residents, yeah.
Well, yeah, absolutely. Lindsay Rademacher is another honoree in our over $2 million in sales category, and she's the retail manager of AG Partners Town and Country in Belle Plaine, Minnesota. So Lindsay started with the store in 2006, and this is really a story of all the amazing things that she's done to grow the business. From a 4,500 square foot farm store that was averaging about $40,000 a month in sales to an 11,000 square foot thriving hardware store today. In the multiple stores category, we have Ryan Buck, who is our Canadian honoree this year. He owns Buck's Home Hardware Building Center and New Germany Home Hardware Building Center in Bridgewater and New Germany, Nova Scotia. So Ryan is a great story of succession in our industry, which, as you and I know it's one of the major challenges our industry faces. So it's great to hear stories like Ryan's, you know, purchasing the business on January 1st, 2019 from his parents, but then taking over and growing the business in many different ways, many different areas. Many times you see that next generation have so many great ideas, and once they get at the helm of these businesses, they just take off. So that's been the case with Ryan and his business. The next honoree in the multiple store, now we're in the multiple store category.
Right.
Cody Gebner, who's a retail manager at Blyle Co-op.
Yeah, they Cody's have- doing well.
Yeah, Cody's done really well, and he's such a fantastic story. Another RMCP graduate from 2017, but he went through the program after he returned to his the family business in Southern Indiana. His family had owned and operated a store there for multiple generations, over 100 years. Unfortunately, that business closed after Cody went through the RMCP program. But while he was in the program, he met a fellow student from Blyle Co-op. So not knowing really what he wanted to do with his future, he made the trip from an invitation from the CEO, Dan Morano at Blyle, made the trip out to Washington, ended up being hired. Now he is one of their key management personnel, and is really just taking the reins and sending people through the RMCP program. But Cody is such a fantastic story of the connections that can be made through NRHA and our programs, and where his career is today. So Cody has been featured on, I believe, Renee's Tell Me More podcast, and I know it'll be fantastic to have him as a guest on your podcast.
Yeah, involved in a lot of NRHA activities, Cody is.
Absolutely. And then finally, we have Matthew Holmes. He's the owner of Holmes Building Materials in Baton Rouge, Louisiana. They have two retail stores there and a number of showrooms located throughout that market. And again, another great story of succession where he took over from his father, John, and is now running the business, doing incredible things. And again, just the growth that the business has seen since Matthew has taken over has been astounding.
Yeah, fantastic. What a, you know, you said it, but what a good example and a diverse group of leaders from kind of across the spectrum of the industry. And one of the reasons we wanted to talk about it on the podcast is because this year we're going to start a kind of a new tradition. And in the coming weeks, towards the end of June, I'm going to actually start featuring each one of these winners as a guest on the podcast. So all of our listeners are going to get to learn a lot more leading up to the awards presentation and ceremony, which we'll be announcing more details about as we get a little bit closer to it. We'll be a little bit different this year with some of the COVID challenges, but we'll kind of make some announcements about that in the near future. But a great group, and certainly for those of you who haven't kind of gotten to go to or see one of the Young Retailer of the Year Awards ceremony presentations, definitely tune in for this, because these stories are fantastic, and not only are they humbling, but I also, like I said earlier, they're also really encouraging as to where we're going with the industry. Scott, thanks so much for coming on the program today and telling us about everything you're doing to help leaders throughout the industry during these during challenging times and not during challenging times. Leadership is so important. And thank you for sharing the stories of this next group of leaders coming into the industry. Scott, last question for you is, if anybody wants to find out more about the Retail Leadership Institute, what should they do, or any of those programs you talked about that fall under the Retail Leadership Institute?
Yeah, Dan, the best way is to visit our website, nrha.org. And so if you're looking for information on the Retail Leadership Institute and the programs we talked about today, you pull up the, it's the training tab, and then there's a Retail Leadership Institute link under the training tab. Okay. And for more information on the Young Retailer of the Year program, you can go to our events tab on nrha.org and then click on awards. And Dan, I would be remiss if I didn't put a shout out to our sponsors of the Young Retailer of the Year program. Major thanks go out to this year's group, Aero Fastener, Epicor, Fluid Master, Intertape Polymer Group, Midwest Fastener, MyTech, excuse me, and Pony Jorgensen. This program and showcasing these young retailers would not be possible without their support. And these are the manufacturers who really put their, and service providers who have put their stake in the ground and said, we will support and serve the independent community. So much thanks goes to our sponsors. And Dan, thank you for having me on. It's been a lot of fun today.
Absolutely. Good good talking to you, Scott. And thanks for sharing the whole host of everything you're working on these days. Stay safe, and I hope to see you soon face-to-face, Scott. Thanks.
Thank you.